won't shut up. And most of all, I will not grow up. Hey there, folks. This is Rashad Field, and I wanted to say a few words about names. Oh, so many names. I feel like I've titled an episode that already, but who cares? I mean, you could call this one, I Have So Many Names, if you want to. Let's see, how do we start on this subject?
I don't know.
Okay, so I will talk about my book, Not the Same. I forgot that I have to do that every time I say it. Okay, well, I'll try not to say the name of the book again, and it's really just a novella, but I just finished it this week, finished the audio book recording this week. Now, that doesn't mean that I have finished editing it, which is a big part of the process, the worst part of the process. Although with my books, the recording can be a bit of a picnic as well, because it is me starting and stopping and lots of silence as I try and rewrite a sentence, and then I record the new sentence, and nope, that's not quite right, and so there's silence again, and me trying to rephrase. It ends up that each chapter of a book that I have written takes substantially longer. Triple, quadruple what it takes to do somebody else's audiobook. But that's fine. I like to think that it means that my stories or my books will be better than they would have been had I not gone through and rewritten and struggled. But at the same time, it's hard to know. And yeah, I almost went on a tangent just right there. But I'll put a pin in that mentally, and you know what that means? It means I'll never go back to it. So I finished the book this week, and at the very, very end, the two sisters recall something that happened when they were in junior high, where a kid tried drugs and it went badly for him. And I had to come up with a name for this kid from junior high. And sometimes with names, I will just look over at a book that I'm reading. Or if I'm at the library, I look over and, okay, there's the magazine section. Let's get a name from the cover of one of those magazines. For example, if a celebrity dies or if somebody is in the news and they meant something to me, often I will name a character after them, like in their honor. But for this kid that tried drugs and he ended up taking off all of his clothes and then he couldn't find his clothes, I decided to name the character after Scott Human Scum Faust, who is the guy that was instrumental in getting me to sign up for Twitter, and then at least once a month, if not more often, will mention me in a tweet, and like maybe something that I've written, he's plugged it, because I'm not willing to do it. If I knew this guy at all, I'd say this is a true friend. And as a true friend, I named this character who was so humiliated when he was in junior high that he had to go to a different school upstate where nobody knew him and what had happened to him. So that I did for him. And it's possible that he will read that book and come upon that reference to himself and take it well. It's also very possible that he will take it the other way. And that's a conversation that I've had with Big Anklevich over and over again. And I had it again just yesterday. He wrote a book called The Gauntlet that was about an ancient magical artifact that gives superpowers to whoever wields it. And it falls into the hands of the brother of a young woman named Ramona Jones. her brother becomes this superhero, but his powers go to his head, and I think they corrupt him. I've not read the book. God knows I've heard Big talk about it enough, but I've not personally read it myself, so I'm not sure if it's good. I'm not sure anything about it, except for that he had an acquaintance, a friend, a fan, a listener. He had something named Ramona Jones. And he just loved her name. And he told her, hey, I'm going to name a character after you at some point. And she's like, oh, cool. And then years went by, and eventually he wrote this book, and she is the main character in the book. And he asked me yesterday, should I change the name? Like, what if she's really upset about it? What if she reads the book and she takes umbrage with something that I've written, or she finds it insulting rather than flattering? Should I change the name? And I didn't know what to tell him. Big and I have had this conversation before. I have named many characters after people that I know. I've named characters after him. I've named characters probably after you. And to me, it is a sign of affection. It is a tribute. It is a neat thing that I am able to do because I am a writer. And if somebody else was a writer and they did that for me, I would take it in the most flattering light possible. There was about a year and a half space where almost every single story that I wrote had a character that was named after a particular girl, and it pleased me to do it. But at the same time, not everybody is a writer, and not everybody has a writer in their life, and not everybody appreciates having a writer in their life. And you've heard it said before, probably by me, but by much better writers than me, that if you're friends with a writer, anything that you say or do may find its way into a book, so be warned. And that's totally true with me. I don't have a lot of friends, but I can guarantee you that if you are my friend, something that you have said or done has made its way into a story that I've written. I feel like we have gone over this subject before, because I told about my friend Ian, and that when I first met him, I was struck by him. I thought he was really cool. And the screenplay that I was writing, the two characters went on a date to a pizza parlor, and I called the parlor Fat Ian's Pizza. And I thought that he would get a chuckle out of that, or he'd be like, oh, hey. He did not. Ian was not fat, but he still took offense to it, to the point where he was just like, I'm not sure that it hurt our friendship. There would be many, many more things that would hurt our friendship in the ensuing weeks and years after that. But I made it a point in every single story that I wrote after that that had a pizza scene or pizza reference in it to always call it Fat Ian's Pizza that they go to or that they order. And I guess that's me being a bad friend. But as the great prophet Popeye taught us, I am what I am. Thank you, Popeye. And the other example that I always use is that John Byrne, who is an artist and writer at Marvel Comics, well, DC as well, a comic book writer and artist, went to school in Canada with a girl named Kate Pryde, P-R-Y-D-E. And her nickname in school was Kitty. And when he and Chris Claremont were working on the X-Men comics, they decided to bring in a kid sidekick character. And Byrne pushed to call the character Kitty Pryde after this girl that he'd gone to school with, an homage, I always liked her name, she was a cool girl, maybe even had a crush on her, Who knows? But they named this character that came about in about 1981, Kitty Pryde, and it was a breakout character. People loved the character. I think they liked that it was a young person because most of the comic book readers were young. She was a Jewish character, and there hadn't been a lot of those that had been, you know, outwardly Jewish. She had this really cool power of being able to make herself intangible. So she could walk through walls. She could reach into a safe and pick something up. She was a very popular character and is to this day. But it was not appreciated by the now woman that John Byrne had gone to school with. And when somebody tracked her down about it, she said, "Oh, that little joke of his has made my life a living hell." Whenever a certain subset of people, she said with a wrinkled nose, heard my name, they would light up and ask me if I knew, to the point where I had to change my name. Because, ugh, what that man did to me. And that story shocked me. It shocked me, dude. Because John Byrne has some issues. He's not a great person. He's certainly a great artist, or he was when I was a kid. But I have no doubt that he meant it in the best way possible. This was not a villainous character. This was an aspirational character, a heroic character, a character who has actually shown up in movies now. That third X-Men movie, when Ellen Page played her, I was just like, oh my gosh, this girl is great. I really, really liked that portrayal of the character, and I liked the actress that played her. Now I realize that saying that is no longer cool, because she is not an actress anymore. She's not Ellen Page anymore. I didn't mean it in a... I guess I was poking the bear by saying her, an actress. I'm just saying that it's a character that is beloved, and a lot more people know the character now, too. The thought that it ruined someone's life gives me pause. It makes me... It is hard for me to sympathize with that woman, but at the same time, nobody is making action figures of Rish Outfield. Nobody is putting a character that was named after me on t-shirts or posters or eventually the silver screen. So I guess I could see it having a negative effect on this lady. The fact that people would notice, people would bugger about it. People would want a picture with her. People would want her autograph. I'm not sure on any of that. But she could just call herself Kate Pryde. She could call herself Catherine Pryde. She could get married and change her last name. She could call herself K.P. Donovan, like Abby Hilton does. Whoops. But, you know, I tried. Sorry, I tried to sympathize. I tried to understand. And hearing stories like that, it does make you hesitant to name a character after somebody that you know or somebody that you like. There have been a couple of people that I did not like that made my adolescence unpleasant that I have named characters after. And that certainly would not be flattering if it got back to one of those high school bullies. And maybe that's actionable. If somebody knew that I had named, you know, a serial killer or a child rapist or a Republican Speaker of the House after somebody that I'd gone to junior high or high school with. But for the most part, it's just a line. It's just a sentence. It's supposed to make you smile if you're that person. I believe my buddy Marshall named a character after me. Maybe he didn't. I feel like I've mentioned this before, too, when Big and I had this conversation. It was probably back on the That Gets My Goat podcast. We talked about it around 2000, 2001, when the show Enterprise, Star Trek Enterprise, was starting up. The character played by Scott Bakula was going to be Captain Jackson Archer. And ultimately, Paramount had to change the name to Jonathan Archer, because it turned out that there was a man named Jackson Archer living in Montana or North Dakota or South Dakota. And they were afraid that they would be sued. It turned out that the law is pretty much on your side if it's a common name and there are multiple people in real life that have that name. So if there are 10 Clarice Starlings in the United States, then you can call your character Clarice Starling. But if there is one and she's living in New Mexico, then you can't, because your lawyers can't say, well, it could be any number of Clarice Starlings that this character is based on, or nobody. I found that just a really, really interesting little point of the law. And, you know, it's probable that had they called him Captain Jackson Archer, that there would have been no lawsuits, no trouble, no problem at all. But they tried to cover themselves on that. They tried to cover their butts on that. I get that, I suppose. Because I am not successful, because my writing is not being turned into movies or anything like that, or being widely read, it's not something that I think about very much. But if you were somebody who is a bestseller or is more likely to have a lot of eyes on what you're doing, I could see it being a problem. You have to submit a whole list of names that go through legal. And there is somebody whose job it is to make sure that there are multiple Carissa Starlings in the country. And whoops, oh, it turns out there's only one Carissa Starling. She lives in West Virginia. Well, it would be best then if we changed the character's name to something more generic. It's like, well, how about Clarice Starling? Sure. That's what we'll do. I like naming characters. I like coming up with character names that sound good to me, that sound like something that you don't mind saying over and over again. With that book that I just finished, the girl that inspired the story, or rather, the story was inspired by conversations that I had with a girl named Kayla. And she had an identical twin, and she seemed, as far as the lawyers go, she seemed okay with answering all of my identical twin questions. And I had a lot of them, because I just found this fascinating, found it so, so interesting. And I have told this as well, that 20 years ago, there was a girl I knew who was not an identical twin, but something much more rare, a mirror twin, which meant that they were close to identical, but they were actually mirror opposites. Like if you had a mole on your left ear, her sister would have it on her right ear. And I found out that mirror twins can have their organs on the wrong side, that somehow it literally is a mirror image, and that is very, very, very rare, but it does happen. And I used to ask Angela these questions about her twin and about being a twin and what that was like, and I kind of crushed on her a little bit, mostly because she was so exotic, and I would ask her questions about her twin, of, you know, knowing that her twin was in danger or had a bad day, even though she hadn't seen her. That kind of stuff just filled my imagination. It still does. And when I met this girl, Kayla, I bent her ear with a bunch of questions. And she seemed, again, lawyers have said, I need to say seemed, willing to answer those questions for me. And so I told her one day I'm going to write a story about identical twins based on what you've told me. And she's like, oh, that's great. She did not seem too excited about that. But she and I had these conversations and I really treasured them. And eventually I did start writing a story called Unidentical Twins about two sisters that get separated for a couple of days. And when they are reunited, the main character thinks that something has changed about her sister, that they're not identical anymore. And when it came time to name these two characters, I ended up naming them Shayla and Layla. And a part of me, for the same reason, the Kitty Pryde reason, the Fat Ian's Pizza reason, I chose not to name one of them Kayla. But they're rhyming names. Because I didn't want, like on the off chance that she read this book, and, you know, most people, I would say 89% of people, if you said, I wrote a book about you, or I wrote a story about the conversation that you and I had, 89% of people would be like, oh, wow, when can I read it? Will you give me a copy? This girl did not, but most people would. And let's say that you're reading it, and as in all of my works, there's a reference to breasts. What if that makes you uncomfortable? What if you feel violated? What if you're like, ugh, he's describing my breasts, not some fictional character? And, you know, I don't think I was describing them. I was just mentioning that she had them. And so, yeah, it is something that Big and I both wonder about, that we speculate about. And Big, I think, does it a little more than I do, because Big still has enough hope and aspiration that one day something that he writes will be successful, and successful enough that action figures get made of it, and lots of people have read it. And that is great. It's great to have those aspirations, but I can see you saying, well, maybe I should cover my butt on this. And this character that I named after the anchor at my news station, maybe I'm going to change the last name or change the hair color or whatever, so that when it gets back to her, she can't say, hey, you said the brunette at this station was an airhead who was only hired because of how tight her skirts were. You know, that kind of thing can inhibit your creativity. It's something to think about. Maybe not something to podcast about, but, you know. And that's all there is on that front. What's interesting is that this file was called I Have So Many Names, One.
What are you?
Which begs the question, was there a I Have So Many Names too?
Oh, I have so many names.
And I think the answer has to be yes. Clearly there was more to this episode. I'll try and come up with something now. But in the meantime, listen to this little bit that I recorded around the same time, and then I'll meet you on the other side. So I've been editing this book, The Cormorant, every single day for months, since January. And I started on chapter 45 today, chapter 45. That is halfway through the book. Something that I've been doing to keep sane is that I will open the audiobook and I will open something else, a different thing, whether it is The Outcast or part of one of my own stories. There are other stories that podcasts have asked me to do during this time, and sometimes I'll open that. And one of the things is also
the next Laura and the Witch story. Novella? I think maybe at this point it's a novella. It seems long because it's such slow going, but it's not actually long. The opposite is true of The Cormorant. It is insanely long. I wish I had more synonyms, but it does not drag. You know, each one of her chapters is manageable. There have been one or two chapters that are really long, but usually it's something that I can get done in one sitting or two sittings. But my own audio work takes forever. It will take anywhere from 30 minutes to an hour for a chapter. So what I've been doing is I've been alternating. I'll get like a little chunk of one and paste it in its own document. And when I finish that, I copy it and paste it back into the original document. And then I go to a different project and do the same thing with a chunk of that. And it's the reason that I do it is that way is because they're very, very small segments, very small goals, very small mini projects. You know, I'm going to work until I get to the end of this chunk. And then, you know, I'll paste that into the full document and hit save. And then I can go outside or I can go to the bathroom or I can, you know, waste time on the internet. It's not optimal, but it does work. I wanted to say something that I discovered today. I've talked quite a bit about Old Widow Holcomb, the secondary protagonist of the Laura and the Witch stories, and, you know, obviously the chief antagonist of the first story, but not since then. She is a character that is endlessly delightful to me because it's unlike anything that I've written before, and I have the added advantage of being able to do her voice in the audio. And it's a voice that I think I've kept fairly consistent, though the character herself has not been totally consistent over all the stories. In some, she is pretty vicious, and in others, she is somewhat sympathetic, somewhat tender. In some stories, she shows her age. She's over 100 years old. And in other stories, she's pretty vibrant and energetic and horny and still has a spark of humor to her. But today I was editing something where she was talking down to Laura, as she often does, you know, complaining about her generation. And it occurred to me whose voice I was emulating. So I've been doing this for 10 years, right? More or less. And it never occurred to me until today that I voice Old Widow Holcomb as Pat Carroll doing Ursula the Sea Witch. Your pretty face, and don't underestimate the importance of body language. The men up there don't like a lot of blather. They think a girl who gossips is a bore. Now, Holcomb isn't exactly an impersonation of Ursula. But Ursula is fiendish, but having a great time with it. And she doesn't speak with an English accent, but she doesn't speak with a easily recognizable American accent where you can say, oh, that's a Boston accent. Oh, that's a Texas accent. Oh, that's a Stanford, Connecticut accent. You know, I think that that's how Holcomb's voice is. She always says Laura. You know, I think that there's an extra syllable in L-A-R-A. Laura, child, girl. In the part that I was editing today, she tells Laura to go in the backyard and pick out a branch from the tree that grows back there. And it's a magical tree. And I think in this story, the company you keep It's the very first time I introduced this tree, and it would be great if I mentioned the tree in future stories. But so far, very few things that are introduced in a story come back in another story. But Holcomb tells Lara to go back there and pick a branch from the tree, and then Lara comes back and she says, "Was it the first branch you saw?" She's like, "No, it was the third, just like you told me." And she says, "And did you thank the tree?" And Lara says, "Yes." And Holcomb says, "And what did it say?" And Lara's not sure if Holcomb is joking or not, that the tree answered her. And so she says something frivolous, like, "It said, see ya, wouldn't want to be ya." And Holcomb says, "I don't know where these plants pick up their manners. You'll be sure to let me know if any tree or shrubbery ever speaks to you by name." And it's just, it's silly nonsense, really, in the same way that Journey into Another Dimension story was silly nonsense. But it's managed to keep my attention for all these years. I mean, in 2023, I'm writing new Lara and the Witch stories, and so I must be doing something right, at least to entertain myself. But also, yeah, it's fun that I've come up with a voice that I can be, that I can go back to time and time again, and that is so entertaining, for me at least, to voice, to perform. Okay, and we're back. Future Rish Outfield here. Boy, that's, if that was ever amusing, that has to have outstayed its welcome years ago. But here I am, May of 2023, and I have finished Cormorant. I finished the book, and yeah, there were moments when it was so hard to keep going because it's very, very long, and I feel like I have spent... Well, I've definitely spent the whole of 2023 on it. But now that it's done, I can do other things. I can do new podcasts. I can do my own stories. And so let's talk a little bit about that. The book, Not the Same, did come out. And the guy that I mentioned at the beginning, who I referenced as being, you know, the kid that took off all his clothes and then had to go to a different school, he did hear himself, his name in the story, and I feel like he was mildly amused by it. Maybe not bowled over with how great he thought that was, but sometimes that's all you can ask. I have spoken to Big since I made that episode, since I did the first part of, "Oh, I've so many names." And he's still not sure what he's going to do. He wrote another story, another book. Big doesn't seem to write stories. He writes novels. And that's great because nobody wants to buy a short story or even a novella. But he wrote another one, and he's hesitant to keep the name of the character because it was named after somebody that he knows. And he's always had a trepidation about how people will perceive the things that he writes. He does tend to write dark stuff. And we've joked many times about his endings that can be bleak and nihilistic. And maybe we're not joking about it. There are certainly people who take these things as a sign that there's something wrong with the writer. You know, anybody who could dream up that kind of scenario shouldn't be walking free around normal people. I'm not saying people say that about Big. I'm saying I have heard that said about certain writers, certain authors. I remember I had a Mormon roommate who said that Orson Scott Card should be excommunicated from the Mormon church. I think because he used the word shit in one of his stories.
But for somebody to say that, they would have had to have read one of his stories. Although maybe not. Maybe you could just hear from somebody else who heard from somebody else who heard from somebody else that he said shit in one of his stories. You have to, well, in a perfect world, people would have to understand that what you write and the writer are not the same thing. That there is a distance, that there are places that you go to come up with creative scenarios, to come up with characters, come up with bad situations, come up with villains that you would not choose to go, that you would not, that aren't part of who you are. I feel like if somebody read like five of my stories at random, they would come away with an idea of me as a writer from just those five stories at random that maybe I would not find flattering. But, well, you know, I have written stories that aren't all that great. And there are a couple of stories that I've written that I don't dare share with other people. Even as like the little bonus stories that I throw into my audio collections, there are one or two that I'm afraid might be misconstrued or might be interpreted as being over the line. I wrote a story years ago, not 20 years ago, but is getting close to it, about a haunted treadmill, you know, an exercise treadmill. I had gotten a treadmill that I ostensibly bought for exercise purposes. It sits unused. I'll bet no one has used it this whole year. But around that time, the same guy, Big Anklevich, mentioned somebody that he knew that had become addicted to exercise in an unhealthy way, where they would exercise in the middle of the night. They couldn't sleep, so they'd decide to exercise. And I thought, well, you know, that makes sense. You can't sleep, and so you decide to exhaust yourself so that you will be able to sleep. And he's like, no, it's not that. I started thinking about it, and I sort of combined the two ideas into a haunted treadmill story. A woman picks up a treadmill at a estate sale or a yard sale or whatever, and her husband starts to worry that she's become fixated in an unhealthy way on this treadmill. And I wrote this story, and I'm not ashamed of it. I think it's fine. I think it's an all right story. But I've never shared it with anybody because I gave it to my buddy Jeff, and he was just like, oh, geez, I did not expect this part. And Jeff has seen it all. You know what I mean? He has a very, very high tolerance for profanity or vulgarity or explicit content or any kind of language or topics, really. And he commented that this was beyond what I normally write. And so I thought, oh no, well, if Jeff noticed it, what would everybody else think? And so I never shared that story again with anybody. It just sits. And yeah, I'd love to sit down and make an episode of The Outcast about it, because I need to make episodes of The Outcast. I'm at a place right now where, because I spent all these months working on Cormorant, I have nothing banked. I have no finished episodes that need only to be dusted off or edited, or I just need to record an intro for. And that's not entirely true as far as the podcast that dares not speak its name. There's still, I think, two episodes from 2021 that never got put out. And there is one from 2022, none of which have been edited. But, you know, I don't really think of those as Rish Outcasts, because they are about somebody else's stories. And my episodes, the episodes of this show are always about a story that I have written or just some topic that I have chosen to talk about. But anyway, I do regret having second thoughts, having reservations about putting out certain stories.
you guys know who I am. You guys know what kind of things I write. You guys know that, you know, we had an explicit warning on the Doonstief. Not because every episode was explicit, but because I would rather err on the side of caution. Of just saying, yeah, you know what? They're all explicit. Yep, they totally are. Bleep you. And I don't believe that that was Big's influence. That's definitely me. But at the same time, I don't put an explicit warning on my show. Anyhow, we were talking about names. Big has written a story and he said, should I change the name? A book. Should I change the name? And he's always had this fear that like a family member would discover something that he wrote or a coworker, and they would bring it to the attention of his family or his boss and say, let's get this guy fired, because that sort of thing does happen. Now, I wrote a novella called 10,000 Coffins, and that's something I could run on the show. I like 10,000 Coffins a lot. I'll consider it. And I sent a copy to my uncle because I thought that he would like it. This was the uncle who is now gone. He'd hurt his back. He had to take disability or whatever you call it, where you can't work anymore. And I missed my exit again. You can't say that I don't give this podcast my all, huh? If I had $10 for every time I've missed my turn or missed my exit because of podcasting, it would be nice. So I sent 10,000 Coffins to him, and he liked it, as far as I know, but he sent it to his brother John, and his brother John liked it, but then John sent it to my mom. And I froze like a deer in headlights there, thinking, what is in this story that might upset my mom or might disappoint my mom? You know, how much profanity is in this story? How much rape is in this story? Do I mention breasts? Because if not, I need to find a way to... Oh, okay. Yep, there's a reference to breasts there. Thank goodness. Woo! Because I made a promise. And so, yeah, I cringed at the thought of my mom reading that I had written. I still cringe. I don't want her to read anything that I write. I don't even want her to read Facebook posts that I write, because I want to be free to be me, warts and all. And I feel like Big and I have that in common in a way. Although I feel like it affects Big in a more substantial way than it does me. Because a big part of me wants to say, I don't care. I don't care if you think I'm a piece of crap. But I do care. The difference is, I don't think Big even says, I don't care if you think I'm a piece of crap. He just doesn't want people to think he's a piece of crap. You know, he works hard every single day in an industry that never appreciates his work. And that's rough. Go over to his podcast sometime, his Patreon or his blog or on Facebook, and just tell him that you appreciate him. You don't even have to tell him I sent you. The names thing. I am aware that there are people that don't want any reference to them, any name. They do not want their name showing up in something that I write. But, you know, at the same time, like I said before, months ago in the first part of this episode, I have been pleased when people do that. When people name a character's uncle after me, or name the cemetery caretaker after me, or name, you know, a serial murderer who was finally brought to justice, they mention on the news, after me. We're not all the same. I get that. And we all have different lines in the sand of what's appropriate, what's inappropriate, what's flattering, and what's insulting. Do you remember toward the very end of when we were doing That Gets My Goat episodes, Big and I did one where James Patterson had put his name on a book that was like the death of Stephen King or the murder of Stephen King. And, you know, somebody else had written the book and he had just, you know, co-authored it. But it never got published, as far as I know, because there was a fear that it would be misconstrued. There was probably a very real fear that King's lawyers could intervene. Because this was a book about like a deranged fan tracking down and murdering Stephen King. And that's not outside the realm of possibility in real life. And King has certainly had stalkers. He had this very public address in Maine where he had done up his house, like a haunted house or something like that. And People magazine had done a pictorial about it, if I'm using that word right. And then people started coming around. And people climbed the fence. And there was this guy in L.A. that I saw a couple of times that insisted that Stephen King had killed John Lennon. And he had it all over his van. And he would announce there on, I think it was on Pico, he would park his vehicle and like an evangelist for anybody who could hear. And King had mentioned that in an interview where he's like, you know, that sort of stuff unsettles me. There's this kook in L.A. that insists that I killed. He has evidence that I killed John Lennon. And so that book never came out for fear of offending, for fear of litigiousness, for fear that it would be read in a bad light. Everybody has a barometer of what is okay and what is not okay. And I remember I wrote something where there was a town marshal named Latham. And that was always meant as, hey, here's a friendly shout out, right? I've referenced many people. Probably I've referenced you if you're listening, if you're a Patreon supporter of mine. If you're not a Patreon supporter, maybe I haven't referenced you. But don't feel left out. Support me on Patreon and comment a couple of times. And guess what? You will find your way in. Another thing that I do a lot, and maybe I do it too much, is I will text somebody and say, hey, give me a name for a kid in school who likes to pick his nose. Give me a name for a female substitute teacher that has a huge ass. Give me a name for somebody who is running for president that has to drop out because of a scandal. Although that doesn't seem to happen anymore, does it? Give me a name for Victoria Holcomb's youngest sister who died under mysterious circumstances. And a lot of times I would just arbitrarily send Big or Marshall or you these texts and I'll just put whatever you say. And every once in a while, I don't use the suggestion because it's too close to the name of a main character or it calls to mind somebody other than a failed presidential candidate or a substitute teacher. And so I don't always use them. But for characters like that, for little things that are just references, I don't mind using stuff like that. And I know that there have been times in the past where I've said, I will acknowledge you in a story. A character will be named after you. And I know that there are people that love that stuff, but there are probably just as many that don't want that. And context has a lot to do with it, too. Again, being the guy who took some acid and then took off all of his clothes and flapped around at a pep assembly in ninth grade and then never lived it down and so had to go to a different school, yeah, that's not quite as flattering as being the detective that finally caught the serial killer that is mentioned on the news who was named after me. Every once in a while, there are just names that I like the sound of. And I remember going through a notebook years ago, let's say 8 or 9 years ago, maybe even longer. And I had written on the side
the margins. Laura Lee Scruggs. And under that I had written really pretty first name, really ugly last name. And then there was like a question mark about that. And yeah, sure enough, in one of my Sidekick Chronicle stories, I named the main female character Lorelei Scruggs. And I always meant to go back and do another like mini adventure with her. And I never did. Those stories are much, much harder than the Laura and the Witch stories or the Dead and Breakfast stories or even the Will Choner stories where I have a mystery that needs to be solved or like a case of a missing something. I wish I could write more of those Sidekick Chronicle stories. I just don't. Anyway, I guess I'm going to leave you now. I hope that this episode was entertaining or interesting in some way. And if it isn't, let me present this.
What in the hell? We're talking away, and I don't know what I'm to say. I'll say it anyway. Today's another day to find you shying away. Oh, I'll be coming for your love, okay? Take on me.
Take on me.
Take me on.
Take on me.
I'll be gone in a day or two. Coward. What? So needless to say, I'm odds and ends, but I'll be stumbling away. I'm slowly learning that life is okay. Say after me, it's no better to be safe than sorry. Take on me.
Take on me.
Take me on.
Take on me.
I'll be gone in a day or two. You can't really do that in Sean Connery's voice. Was that better? Yeah, but I think you're still a whole octave down. Down below where I'm supposed to be. Right. All the things that you say, yeah. Is it life or just a play? My worries away. You're all the things I've got to remember. You're shying away. But I'll be coming for you anyway. Take on me.
Take on me.
Take me on.
Take on me.
I'll be gone in a day.
Take on me. I'm supposed to hold it out that long.
I'll be gone in a day. That's not bad. That's not bad. That's the best I'm capable of, man. Sorry.
You know that A-ha did a Bond theme, don't you?
Yeah, I know. They did Living Daylights, I think.
Well, why didn't we do that?
Didn't occur to me until just now.
Oh, ho, ho! Well, that's it, folks. Thank you for listening. I hope that if you enjoy my work, you subscribe. Subscribe? Can you do that? That feels like a YouTube thing. That you support me on Patreon. It's patreon.com/Rish Outfield. Or that you leave a comment. Once a week, I look for new comments on my blog. And every single time, there is nothing. Boohoo, right? Every once in a while, there is a spam. Somebody has posted something from, you know, a 2013 post or 2002 post, and I have to, I don't think I was blogging in 2002, and I have to erase it. But feel free to support me however you feel is best. How's that? And hopefully I will be back soon with many, many more names to share with you. Good night.
And with that, the end has come to another Burish Outcast. It was produced under a Creative Commons Attribution No Derivatives Share Alike license, which allows free distribution of the show, but does not allow it to be claimed, edited, or sold, or for it to be bisected by a laser beam. If, unlike me, you enjoy the show and would like to help it continue, please visit www.patreon.com/RishOutfield to donate a dollar and up an episode and bring Rish Outfield back from the brink of despair. Though not of madness, that, my friends, has already claimed him.
I may not always love you, though shit.
Oh, what have I done?
Wait, how do you even know who Aubrey Hepburn is?
Was Daddy.
Right. Wait, it says right with a question mark. What does that mean? Like, right?
Yeah, that's a mistake. No problem.
Oh, okay. I thought it was one of those things like, you know, millennials go, I know, right?
They all go, I know, right?
Anyways.
Do you hear that? And I see if I can get it in between the bullshits. So Holcomb just said, now I'll exit the room and just you see what it does. Do you hear that? Of course you hear it. She did precisely that. And as though Holcomb had been controlling it, the stick did nothing. She did precisely that. And as though Holcomb had been controlling it, the dousing rod now did nothing. God damn it. The dousing rod now did nothing. Lara held the stick in front of her and slowly pointed it. All right.
Or your bunghole.
Ew, son.
Scary music starts playing. Answer the question, please, Dad. Ask your funeral director about Dengardru life today. Coverage available at all Latham and Marciano's discount casket and crematoriums in the tri-state area. Dengardru life. I guess I didn't write the rest.
You said Marcianos. I don't know if you wanted to say maraschinos. Dengardru life. Hawaii. I think that's how they spell Hawaii in Brazil.
That's effed up, dude. Yeah, I wanted it to be like the commercial in Toy Story 2.
Right.
Where the guy was like very clearly reading it and he had this accent. Al's Toy Barn, right?
Available in, yeah, all Al's Toy Barn outlets in the tri-state area. Not a flying toy.
We've had this type of conversation before with names because we've both got... God, what an asshole. He actually honked at me instead of getting out of the way. Maybe it was a courtesy honk. Hey, I'm about to cut you off. Hey, I'm not stopping. F*** you. All right, there you go. Have a good day. Oh, it would be great if you could put a honking sound instead of a bleeping sound over the F word. Gosh, that would be good.
Oh, I have so many names.